Hi all, and welcome to the second version of Happy Hackmas Cybeers. Today, joined for the first time in quite a while by Thomas Mackay, Managing Advisory Consultant. Welcome, mate.
Yeah, thanks for having me. It's been, I think it was the third day at TL I jumped in on a Cybeers.
In the South Melbourne boardroom.
Yeah,
that's a little while
just
ago.
Just like, come sit down here. It won't take a minute.
Yeah, let's just record a video.
Yeah, it's taken a while to get back, but. Yeah.
Look, I'd like to say special guests, Craig Martin, Incident Response Manager, and Richard Granger, Global Digital Forensics Lead.
Thanks for
having
me.
I'd like to say special guests, but you guys are just here all the time.
Furniture.
So, yeah. Like drinking beers and talking about cybersecurity.
Yeah.
Look, we took the time to swing past Brick Lane. They've just opened a new brew house at the Queen Vic Markets. I'm a very big fan of Melbourne beers, or beer in general. Melbourne beers are especially a favourite of mine. So I've gone with the Bomby XPA from Brick Lane today. I like a nice XPA. It was 33 degrees, meant to be today. Yeah, it's dropped down to about 22 now. Thomas, what have you got there?
So I've got the Backyard of Crisp Lager, which is music to my ears, considering it's 30 degrees out and, pretty hot. So, yeah. Can you give it a go?
Yeah.
Craig, what have you've got the Brick Lane special as well?
Yeah, Meteor, the alcoholic ginger beer.
Oh, you do like a ginger beer.
You like ginger beer.
Yeah.
Anything, a bit of fruit or something a little bit different.
Yeah, it's not my alley. Alcohol.
Yeah.
And then Granger, you've just been a bit boring and gotten your stock standard.
brought a couple of these. So I know they go down well. So.
Why not? Look, getting into that Bomby, that is a standard XPA. It's got a bit of heft. It's a bit heavier than the pale. Could be a bit colder. I think colder, it's going to be a bit nicer. Brick Lane, you might want to turn your fridges down a little bit.
Yeah, probably left them in the car for now.
Yeah, probably not. Unrelated. So you're saying it's our fault, not Brick Lane's. How's the pale ale?
Yeah, it's good. You could drink a lot of these.
Yeah.
you could really drink a lot of these.
That's the problem. Well, it is summer. So
yeah.
I know three of us are trying to lose a few kegs at the moment, so I don't know how that's going to go for us. Craig, how's your ginger beer?
Also very good. Recommending so far.
Yeah?
Yeah.
You drink a lot of ginger beers. Where would you rate this in the scale 1 to 10?
It's up there. We're talking like 8 territory at least.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Ooh, one sip, everyone knows
and
the rules.
It is mediumly warm, so,
could be cold, a bit of ice, it would have been nice. And Rich, better beer. It's
good stuff. Still hanging out for the sponsorship, but we'll keep waiting on that one.
All right, so we are talking about Hackmas. We've got a bit of a different approach this time around. We've actually gone out and asked for some questions that the general public would like to know about cybersecurity. We asked during Acer CyberCon. We were there. Was it last week or the week before? I'm already lost.
I think last week.
It was last week.
It was last week.
Last week. How time flies. Mm. We've gone out to LinkedIn. We also went out internally and to check if there was any questions anyone had. So, guys, I'm going to be the true moderator today. You're the panel.
Uh-oh.
you're all in the hot seat. And look, we do have a lot of questions that have come through. It's been fantastic. We'll do this a couple of times, I'm sure. So we're not going to get to talk about everything in depth. There's going to be some things that we'll just have a brief chat about. There's one question in particular that we've just discussed, guys, that we said we can do a whole Cybeers topic on this, and that is encryption. But I'm going to start with the first one, and that's from LinkedIn, through the TL LinkedIn page. So are there more cyber attacks during Christmas and New Year? And then if there is, do we take any special precautions during these holidays?
Look, I'll just start and say my phone's been blowing up like a 40-gate today. So it has been it's already starting off pretty busy come December. And that's true to form for what we've had the last few years, to be honest. Rich, how many vulnerabilities has been released, high-profile ones in a December?
It's a lot, yeah. It seems like almost every December there's some new critical vulnerability that's and then a proof of concept comes out as well. And directors kind of weaponize that to gain a lot of initial access during December period. So, yeah, it is quite a busy period for us.
So while everyone's sort of rolling down over Christmas, we're really amping up. So we will have our team rolling all the way through Christmas. We're ready to go, expecting basically phone calls Christmas Day, Boxing Day, just to be there for when it does happen, because we're just anticipating, I suppose, that it will.
Yeah, and we see a fair bit of initial access, right, that they they get that these threat actors. They'll get it during that Christmas New Year period, and they'll use it throughout the year to then come back, compromise VPNs, making sure you've got persistent access in there that you can just utilize through the year.
Industry-wide as well, feedback has been that November was the quietest that it's been in ages.
Really? Quite across November? Ransomware, BSE?
Well, ransomware and BSE, particularly ransomware, it was right down globally. So this is across like Australia and US, UK, which, you know, that's only a matter of time until they ramp back up again. So take a month off or, you know, go and fiddle with some things potentially. With some high-profile events in November, but...
Oh, there was a little election, wasn't there, in the United States?
Little one.
just a small one.
Yeah, it's a little one.
Couldn't miss it.
Yeah. So, yeah, we were expecting it busy.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. Tom, what kind of precautions would you recommend then are taken through this period in particular, while we're all sitting, having nice turkey, all the trimmings and wines on Christmas Day, New Year's, etc.?
Yeah, exactly. Make sure your monitoring's up to scratch, you know, while you're sitting around hanging out with the family. Make sure that, you know, however you've got it arranged, someone's, you know, keeping an eye on it and you can have that peace of mind there. And then, you know, make sure it's very clear about, you know, who's got responsibilities. If there needs to be some patching done over the shutdown, you know, your IT stuff's still online. So, you know, if you're working with third parties, make sure that there's a bit of a plan, to, you know, particularly if they've got staff on leave as well. And, you know, just be ready to respond. But, yeah, monitoring, peace of mind.
Yeah, and information security policy is great, but it's not going to save you from a ransomware.
Yeah, exactly. At least it'll stick out like a sore thumb in the sock, you know, someone downloading a couple hundred gigabytes on Christmas Day.
So, yep.
Yeah, look, absolutely. And that's the thing of making sure you've got the response as well. It's all well and good to say monitor, but if your person who's on call is a couple of bottles of wine deep, it makes it a little bit more difficult to get things done.
Yeah, exactly. All the new starter.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. You always put the new guy on Christmas Day.
Yeah, exactly, right?
Short straw. Yeah. There you go. See you, mate.
Just do raffles. So, all right. So basically, if you don't have monitoring in place now, you're really starting to cut it fine. But also don't rely on your strategy, because you should have been working on that the last 12 months of putting the right things in. And in November, December, really has to be that focus on monitoring. Mine would be go through, check your AD, make sure you've got MFA on everything from an email perspective, make sure you've got MFA on the VPN, do a password audit across AD.
Yeah.
Still seeing generic passwords. How many times can we whinge about that on Cybiz? I just don't know. So go through, do that kind of audit, no sanity checks, patch everything. Dude, you should have done some red teaming already to make sure defenses are up to scratch. That'd be mine. All right, on to the next. So this one came from LinkedIn. So this is a bit of a curly one. As AI adoption increases, will offensive tools and solutions advance more, or defensive solutions show greater adaptability and innovation?
Good question. We should have had Jack on here to talk about the offensive side.
Yeah, absolutely.
I think on the offensive side, it just lowers the bar, right? Mm. And like, you know, that's what I say, like the hackers aren't necessarily getting better. But you know, with with Mimcats and all these various tools, it just becomes so much more accessible.
Yeah.
You know, you can just bring people in, and I think that's what, you know, we've seen with AI tools on the offensive side, or, you know, particularly being used by threat actors, you know, around phishing and stuff like that, you know, just makes it so much easier. Someone, you know, does speak English that well, or is a native language, they could, you know, that bar is just so much easier for them to get in. So that's, I don't think it's going to be groundbreaking changes. I just think, again, it just lowers the bar. It just makes it easier and easier for people to go use these tools without any real skill.
Mm. Well, there were 300,000 people in the world who spoke Icelandic. Now there's 9 billion because of the advent of tools like WormGPT, which we've talked about on Cybiz before, ChatGPT without guardrails. So it just opens up all these tools, and you got to see it from a digital forensics perspective. You don't have to be the world's greatest threat actor anymore.
No.
If you've got these tools, it's going to achieve lateral movement for you.
Yeah.
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 So, yes, it's changing the game. from an offensive perspective. Defensive, it's tough because we always have to catch up. New technology will come. It will enter into the hands of threat actors, and then as responders, we have to always look and go, oh, I know. How do we respond to this? It's like everyone's working on quantum crypto at the moment, and it's like, okay, when that comes, what are we doing to replace it? It has to happen first before we do it. Yeah. So, yes, a lot happening in the AI space. All right, Rich, I'm going to start with you. Your most interesting data breach or major cyber event story of 2024 and why? And he specifically said size, tactic, target, impact, etc.
Size, tactic, target, impact. Okay. I'd say from my perspective, probably was one involving a managed service provider. So, which then had like an onward effect down to all their clients as well. I think the most interesting tactic for me from that perspective was kind of not necessarily like a really, really sophisticated method of exfiltration, but something that we don't see normally. So a lot of ransomwares we see like, cool, they download FileZilla and install it and just exfiltrate and that's it. And no one notices until they get encrypted. But for this particular one, they were actually really quite stealthy, I suppose is a good word, and how they were exfiltrating the data. So they had like a scheduled task that would use rclone. rclone was sitting in an allow listed folder within Defender as well, because rclone does get flagged now by Defender for being malicious. So it was allow listed, so it run. It was renamed to a legitimate tool, and it would basically only upload during the day. It was quite slow when it would upload, so it would be limiting the bandwidth. So no one would be like, why is the file server so slow? Why is all this, you know, it's not operating correctly? And then someone would start looking into it. But then when it hit, I think it was 11 p.m. at night, floodgates unleashed, go nuts. And the very successful data exfiltration by them, they were able to get, I think it was like 4 terabytes or something. It was like a really large bit of...
sizable amount of data.
Sizable amount of data. So that's probably the most interesting sort of tactic I've seen this year. And just from just out of the ordinary, you know, they were very clever about how they did it. So that was mine.
They're actually smart. Good group.
Yeah.
Craig?
I think most interesting cyber-related incident in the IR space this year is Operation Kronos. The takedown of Lockbit, followed by the re-emergence of Lockbit, followed by the takedown of Lockbit.
And the re-emergence of Lockbit, the takedown, the emergence. Yeah.
But like from incident response like landscape perspective is completely changed in the last 6 months following on from that. So we're seeing a lot more threat actor groups rising up. We're seeing some of those new threat actor groups are not offering ransomware as a service models. They're in-house operators. We own and run our own software. Funnily enough, the software is built on the Lockbit source code that got leaked. So like they didn't have to rebuild the whole thing from scratch, but we're seeing these groups start to become smaller, and then they're going to develop their own flavour, their own style for how they conduct these attacks.
Some of them even copy the web page from Lockbit and forget to change some of the details.
Exactly right. but I think the other really interesting thing that's come off the back of it as well is the increase in joint law enforcement activity as well. So we're seeing AFP and ACSC being more active as part of incident response. We're seeing if we're initiating takedown requests, they're getting actioned faster. They're getting actioned in areas where they weren't getting actioned historically as well in different regions. So that means sort of the faster we can get into an IR, the faster we're finding things like exfil, the faster we can potentially take it off the air, and hopefully it never makes the sort of public airwaves.
Yeah, but then legislation's going to come and change all that. Yeah,
it's not going to change everything else. It's not going to change all your regulations and reporting requirements, but the less data out there, the better.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
And the less ambulance chasing from specific vendors and groups, the better.
Yeah.
I think that's been one of the topics we've seen more of this year that needs to disappear and needs to go away.
Yeah.
It is the vendors reaching out saying, do you know you've been breached? Do you know your data is available on the dark web? Well, yes. That's why we've had instant response.
Been dealing with it for the last six weeks.
Yeah. So that needs to disappear from the industry. That's not a place for the industry. Anyway, I could go on a rant about that. Tom, I know you're not in the IR space, but surely you've got a favourite that you've seen, you've observed.
Yeah, there was one that occurred where Threat Actor managed to steal some credentials from another MSP and then accessed an RMM tool and then very rapidly managed to deploy ransomware and do the data exfil. A bit of a unique method of entry, and just shows that, you know, these, you know, privileged utility tools super handy, but you've got to, you know, really protect them. And sort of been, you know, going and working with some clients afterwards around their RMM tools and things like that. And a lot of people, you know, don't put a lot of effort into setting them up. Everyone's got, you know, just all, you know, all permissions in there, and it, you know, it's overlooked. So that one was pretty interesting. So.
Yeah, protect your RMM with MFO.
Classic Thomas talking about third-party compromise as well.
Yeah, exactly. I see his eyes light up talking about third-party compromises. All right, Rich, Craig, more for you. When you respond to an incident, how do you take IOCs, for anyone watching at home, indicators of compromise, TTPs, tactics, techniques and procedures, and other learnings, and share that beyond your customer base to help the rest of the digital community at large?
That's a really good question. So a couple of things we do. So we are partners with ACSC. So a big part of that is taking information from SOC, DFIR, and then being able to feed that back to the ACSC through their threat intelligence, which then goes to other partners as well. So that's a really big part of it. I know the team also really, really enjoy going out to like conferences and events and talking about anonymized case studies where, you know, this is what we've seen in real life examples of an engagement, and you know, walking people through what that is and how you can protect yourselves from that as well. I think that's really big. The guys have also some really good publications that went out this year. Obviously, we had our first sort of official annual Status Cyber report, which went through a lot of what we see and how you can protect yourself. There was a really good white paper they did as well on session token theft as well, which is, you know, obviously we're seeing that a lot in business email compromise at the moment. So protecting yourself from that's really good. And I know you Craig, and you and Chris and the team are also doing a lot of work with boards and things like that.
So, like, you don't have to have experienced an incident to collect the IOCs now. Like, just building awareness along different levels of the organisation around what are the techniques being used, what's on the horizon, what's on the radar, to try and get people thinking forwards as well, is probably just as important as what has happened. So, but, you know, there's never enough of this information. You could always publish more and release more. It's definitely tricky.
Yeah.
And I guess when we talk about TTPs, that's why we sit and record these on a monthly basis. It's why we do the sessions that we do a lot of learning, we do a lot of awareness to share what we're seeing from a ransomware perspective. Unfortunately, most of what we see, it's the same TTPs. It's no MFA on a VPN, generic credentials, no backups. You got a NAS on the same network segment. We're not seeing the groundbreaking stuff. It's not going and looking, going, oh, I'm going to get into that organization through
0 days kind of thing.
If there was some really cool stuff, there'd be more publications about it.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, this is why we're here nagging about password strength and around MFAs, because it's what we're constantly seeing.
Yeah. And it's why we've got fatigue from it a little bit as well. We're talking about it. So, follow-up question from that. How do we get around issues including customer targeting using IOCs and IP issues?
This is if I understand the question correctly, it's around how it can be difficult to share information with the wider group, because you can then use that to attribute who the victim was and you can learn more about their incident. So that's a really good question as well. That's a very difficult one to do. And sort of going back to how we work with the ACSC and providing the IOCs, that information, it's actionable, but it doesn't have the context that we would love to have in there. Because we obviously have it all internally with, like, when we have all these IPs, it's like, all right, well, that was C2, exfil server, like a lot of context around why it's important, which you can't really necessarily pass through to the ACSC. So that does make it really difficult.
We do share the high fidelity info with ACSC through the the joint partnership.
Yeah.
And that's why it was really good to see ACSC open up the threat intelligence sharing, what feels like a couple months ago. I think it was 18 months ago now.
Yeah.
To say, okay, we're going to share the IOCs through partners that run SOCs that are able to share information back. Yeah. There's a number of times we've also worked with AFP to share actionable insights that we've gathered during matters and incidents. So we do a lot of it. Could we do more? Absolutely. Mm. There's more that we'd like to do. But at the moment, it's about getting out there and helping the customer base, educating people.
Yeah.
There's always ways and means to share more.
Yeah.
It is hard as well because some clients, like they just can't talk about it. Like they've just been told, like, yep, you can't publicly talk about this. We have had a couple of clients that have been like, I never want to go through that experience again. I'm more than happy to.
I like you, Rich, but I never want to see you again.
Yeah, yeah. But I feel like I went on a journey through this incident that I was a part of, and, you know, I'm more than happy to share that knowledge with other people. So there's been times when I've done a presentation with a client that we worked with on a ransomware. I know I had a couple of conversations with clients recently as well where they're, you know, they're keen to be able to give back and talk about it from their perspective as well. So I think if we can do that more, I think that's really good as well. But it's a difficult, yep, it's a difficult, yeah, thing to navigate.
Time is the greatest enemy.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That's the thing. And when Craig says, as he says, his phone's blowing up 4, 5, 6, 7 times an hour.
Yeah.
It just makes it hard. How many cyber sessions have we planned that we've gotten a phone call? Called the guys here at the studio and said, whoop, sorry, not going to make it. It genuinely happened last week during CyberCon.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
It's time's their biggest enemy.
Yeah.
Tom, one for you. And this is from a client of ours who we've worked pretty closely with for a number of years. What is the best encryption standard? And can you provide a summary of how certificates work?
Yeah, sure.
It's a broad question.
It is a broad question. So
it's one of those it depends answers, I think.
Yeah. Well, there's a large variety of encryption standards. I would say, you know, the best one is the one that's used in the right way, in the right location, you know, protecting the data. Often see, you know, audit findings and things where people are saying, you know, it's a critical risk that hard drive that's locked in a data center is not encrypted at rest. And it's just like, well, you know, that's not really the point, but then you come across APIs that aren't being encrypted. So for the best, I'd refer back to, you know, publications from ASD and the Cybersecurity Center with what's up to date at the time and use that. For the various product.
Depends if it's data at rest, in transit,
whether it's latency sensitive. Some encryption algorithms are, you know, a lot more CPU intensive than others. That's less of a problem these days. But, you know, particularly if you're building cloud apps and you're paying for compute, it can, you know, have, you know, pretty big cost implications. So,
I was actually watching a TV show the other day and they were like, oh, gosh, we can't break in. They're using Diffie-Hellman encryption. It's like you're just throwing out buzzwords by this stage.
I love the there's an XKCD comic and it's like how crypto nerds think it works. And it's like, oh, you know, it'll take 100 million years with our quantum computer to crack this. It's like how it really works. It's like I've gave him some drugs and here's a hammer. You know, go get the password out. So in terms of the certificates, so that's like it's a public-private key relationship. So it's you know, the certificate signed at the root by the certificate authority with their private signing key, which they take go to a great amount of deal to protect. It's generally air gapped and have intermediary signing certificates, so, you know, completely airlocked away. I can't remember which one of the companies got in a little bit of trouble the other day, and might have been Let's Encrypt. They had to reissue a few million certificates within a couple of days, or they're going to lose their primary key status, which is massive.
Oh, that's huge.
Let's Encrypt is
open source.
Yeah.
Free certificates.
I believe it was Let's Encrypt. I might be wrong, but it was one of the major companies. So,
Just caveat it with it might have been them, but it might not have been them.
Someone like
Let's Encrypt.
But essentially, they got audited, and there's really, really strict, you know, governance and rules around that. So, protect your certificates.
I can tell you did your CISSP recently because I couldn't remember how certificates worked. I just know they do. All right. again, another one for probably Rich for you. Based on what you're seeing in the landscape, what threats do you believe are going to either increase or continue to remain as the top cybersecurity threats in 2025?
I think, unfortunately, it's going to be business email compromise and ransomware that we continue to see. The threat actors performing this are financially motivated. They're making money out of it. I think they're just going to continue to down this model.
Do you think we're going to see as many ransomwares, considering the research is saying that less organisations are paying because they've got better response plans?
I think the threat actors are still going to do it. Maybe the payoff isn't as much, but all it takes is, you know, just get one really good encryption on a victim organisation that's got their backups are gone and they make the decision to pay. I mean,
we're still seeing payments being made.
We are still seeing, just in probably a less frequent,
but higher amounts. I feel so they know they're not getting as many payments, so they're going for higher amounts. That really cool one we saw where the file tree was provided as proof of life, but it was only a small part of the file tree.
Yeah.
To prove the evidence, I think the threat actors are going to take more initiatives like that. Yeah. So then it encourages you to pay more because most people are just going to sift through and go, no, we actually don't care about that data, so we're not going to pay.
Yeah. The other thing to consider is the attacks themselves, in terms of being able to go from start to end, are highly successful. And there's not many attacks that get interrupted halfway through. So finding new ways to monetize their existing attacks is something that sort of where not anticipating, but we just continue to see ransomware has evolved over the last 6-7 years. There's no reason why that wouldn't continue. May also happen with business email compromise too.
Yeah.
They're already so successful, let's monetize.
Mm.
Yeah.
It's all about making money.
Yeah.
At the end of the day, that's all it's about. Second follow-up from this, Tom, for you. What are some of the emerging techniques that we're seeing attackers use to bypass MFA?
Yeah, so a big thing is, sort of seeing, it's been around for a little while, but it's getting, really improved, is that, phishing platform as a service, right? You can just go, generally being sold on Telegram groups for not that much money, essentially get white labeled with your own platform to perform phishing attacks.
Phishing SaaS platform. Thanks for coming.
You're responsible for delivering the link, however you want to get it through to the victims, and when they log in, it literally looks exactly like their login portal. So that's a big one, stealing the branding, using that dynamically to increase that trust factor. The session and token hijacking, is such a major
good old school man in the middle attacks, right?
Yeah.
And Evil Gen X too. It's been around. We've got a blog on it from 9 years ago.
Yeah.
That was written, and it's still getting abused.
And it's been so prolific, right? And finally Microsoft have actually done something about it. So it's in beta at the moment. But you need Entra
ID Plan
P2.
You got to have the good one.
Yeah.
You got to pay for it. You got
expensive one.
Yeah, you got to pay to secure your things.
Yeah.
And then it effectively cycles it every time and prevents that attack. So that's really good.
The technology hasn't changed for 10 years.
No.
What is this social engineering element of it now too, of trying to get in the circle of trust. So I'm actually going to embed my credential harvester in a victim's SharePoint site, and I'm going to send it from a legitimate SharePoint site.
Yeah.
And it's not going to get blocked,
I'm
going to
send
it
from a legitimate Dropbox site
to the user. There was something the other day about that.
So we're seeing that all the time now, is we're seeing legitimate platforms from compromised individuals being used to compromise their contacts. So once you get I got an email from Nick that was from SharePoint, from the TL SharePoint, open here, I clicked on it, it took me to SharePoint.
Yep.
So then I put in my credentials and it's fine. Actually just a classic credential harvester.
Nothing's going to find that. We talked to the team from Microsoft this morning around this, and we were talking about safe links, and now the Microsoft Defender for Mail, Plan 2.
Yeah.
Always Plan 2. That's looking inside of emails, inside of Word documents. It's not just looking at the email itself, but it's actually looking inside the attachments for any hyperlinks for anything that's going to do credential harvesting. But if it's all legit and just taking you through to a SharePoint page, it's all legit.
Yeah.
Using legit tools. They use living off the land binaries and scripts for years during ransomware attacks. Now use them during business email compromise.
If you're the average user, you would not know any better.
And most don't.
Oh, a bit of an uptick as well. Cybersecurity Center released in their report as well as the QR code phishing coming through as well. And, you know, some, you know, mail filtering tools being quite slow to implement that. So we've seen that certainly occur at a couple of customers and that sort of picking up pretty rapidly. Surprised we didn't see more of it during COVID when everyone was checking and scanning QR codes. But threat actors, sometimes they're not the brightest, but they seem to have cotton on. That's a good idea.
One of our sales guys has actually put a QR code as his wallpaper on his phone, and I almost scanned it the other day, and I'm like, oh, no, it's probably silly. It links to his LinkedIn profile. To his LinkedIn.
Classic.
Classic
sales guy technique.
That's so good.
Shout out to Simon. All right, couple more because I know we're running out of time. Pros and cons of honeypots, honeynets as other devices, cybersecurity strategy and defenses. Rich.
Yep.
Honeypots. So, we know a little bit about that at the moment.
Yeah, so for those not familiar with honeypots, essentially it's like setting up systems to lure an attacker into interacting with it so that you can get telemetry and alerting on it. I think honeypots are great. I think it is a very valid tool to have in an organization's tool chest, but it's part of defense in depth. I wouldn't be like honeypots my only thing.
In a highly monitored, structured environment, a honeypot is an asset. In a low maturity organization, it's a waste of money compared to some of the other things you could spend money on.
In my view, if you're using an open source honeypot though, there's no damage.
But the amount of time they spent setting up that, they could have put in other things that...
Yeah, look, it should take you 10 minutes to set up if you're a decent sysadmin and know what you're doing. And it's going to provide that early detection of someone's at least doing a port scan. Someone might be in there now. Your problem is, in a low maturity organization, Joe from, finance, got a little bit of an interest in IT. He finds this little tool. And he just goes and does a port scan across the whole organization just to find what he can. Yeah. And you do that, and if you're low maturity, you're going to see that, and you're just going to be jumping in shadows.
Yeah.
So if there's process and rigor behind it, I think it's a great tool.
I think, especially as well, if you're setting up internally, if your honeypot's being triggered and you haven't figured out what caused that, something's already gone wrong.
Yeah. All right. Third last one. What ideas are we exploring around generative AI to improve IR functions in containment and remediation, and how are we implementing this functionality to uplift the IR capability, and are we able to share these ideas with the wider community?
It's a good question.
We spoke about this before.
Yeah.
And I'm going to be honest, it's not something that we've looked into in depth.
Yeah.
We obviously work pretty closely with a number of vendors. I won't name names. And we're really relying on them from their perspective on AI. In the SOC, on the other hand, there's a lot that we're doing to bring information in around cases that we've seen before.
Yeah.
So we've seen this type of alert, we've seen this kind of case, and it goes and searches through our last 8 years of history. So have we seen this before? What intelligence can we apply to that to get the MTTD and MTTR and MTTP down? Because that's the key. Average at the moment is 9 minutes for MTTD and 9 minutes for MTTP. So we've got 18 minutes from the time it's critical from the time we see it till we protect. If we can get that down even further through the use of generative AI, then we won't need to have IR. That's the whole part. So I think it's difficult in an IR perspective. There's things that you guys can do around collection of evidence and then analysis of evidence.
Yeah.
But it's not that mass collection. The tool can only do so much.
Yeah.
You need to know what you're looking at and what you're doing.
There are some, we use a couple of different forensic tools, and the vendors are rolling out AI functionality with it. But to be honest, I haven't used it. I know some of the team had to play with it. My initial thoughts on that is it's always trust but verify. Like, yep. you can have a play with it, see what it does. It might improve the speed, but you always need to manually validate those findings, especially if you're relying on them in a report.
It's probably a ChatGPT wrapper anyway.
Yeah.
Well, I have had some testing with ChatGPT where I gave it a command line and it gave me the wrong answer. Yeah. So,
and the Copilot stuff we saw when they had the release of, hey, look what you'll be able to do with ransomware, and it'll write the report for you. I was super excited when we saw that.
Yeah. It would have been great.
Yeah, it would have been great. I think that was done in a test lab somewhere because it certainly didn't operate the way it was sold. And there was the big song and dance and everything about Copilot's going to change socks and IR teams. Haven't seen it yet.
Yeah.
So I think there's still a lot more maturity to come.
Yeah.
Thomas, you got any ideas on strategies or tools to recommend for someone starting in vulnerability management to effectively identify and prioritize risks in an organization's cybersecurity landscape?
Yeah, it's a great question. Saying a lot of organizations struggle with vulnerability management. It's the endless sort of hamster wheel. Constantly getting pinged in audits, thousands and thousands of internal vulnerabilities. Start off with tooling. So, the full Qualys platform is quite good. We like it. We use it. It's not the cheapest tool, but that, can do front to back. And it's all about understanding the risk with the assets. That's why we always say external vulnerabilities first. Those are the ones you want to jump onto. And then work your way back down through the list. The Rapid7 IVM is also quite good. It's sort of, I think they say they use a bit of AI and stuff to try and do the scores. But prioritize based on the risk. Don't try and close them off and get to zero. Mm. You'll drive yourself mad and never get there.
The thing we always talk about is asset classification.
Yeah.
So is it externally facing? But just because the tool says it's critical doesn't mean it's critical. Is it externally facing? If yes, might be critical. Does it have tools on there like EDR and SIEM? If yes, reduces the score. Does it have sensitive information? No, reduces the score. Do you have protections against lateral movement? If yes, reduces the score.
And is it actually being exploited in the wild, or is it a proof of concept that a researcher's come up with in a lab? You go filter on that metric in a lot of vulnerability scanners, out of thousands and thousands that are reported, you might only actually have, 100 vulnerabilities that actually have proven exploits that we know threat actors are using. Obviously, nation states will do their own thing, but, that's a bit above and beyond just, the average threat actor.
Yeah.
And the last one, how often are you able to decrypt ransomware files in the last 3 years? Quite a few small businesses now promise decryption with high success in their marketing. Rich, Craig, we've got pretty strong viewpoints on these organisations that are claiming to decrypt.
If you're hit by a ransomware threat actor today, the chance of that ransomware variant being decryptable is next to nothing.
But these businesses claim that you can decrypt it. Just pay us and we'll decrypt.
Yeah, and all you've got to do is pay for them to buy two servers that cost $20,000. And they'll sit in your office for a month trying to do it, and then at the end they'll walk away with two pretty much brand new servers.
You're talking from experience there, Craig.
And surely they're not going to the threat actors and doing a dodgy barroom deal where they just pay them for the decryption keys and decide to split the funds. They wouldn't do anything like that.
As we're seeing some of these ransom amounts go up, these small businesses that are offering decryption services will have their fees increase substantially also.
Yeah. If the small businesses that are offering this were able to do the R&D and develop the techniques to be able to do this, they would be
unicorns.
Unicorns, yeah. And they would be NSA would be like, hey guys, let's be friends because you should come and work for us now.
I think from one of the incidents early on this year, something that was really, really cool was one of your analysts reconstructing the bitmap. Profile.
Bitmap caching.
There and actually managing to get the, it was an input password, I believe, into the encryptor.
Yeah.
Don't reveal too much because there will be some research coming out about this.
Yeah.
So hold on to that one. Conscious of time here, guys. So last one, small businesses under 20 machines. What combination of AV/backup architecture, design and practices would you recommend based on experience and some quick wins outside of not having RDP to the world? I'll grab this one. Defender, not plan one, plan two. If you've got M365, if you're a licensed user, you don't have to go all the way up to E5. It can be business premium or E3. With the Defender, plan two, again, plan two, step up. So not the bolt on, the step up. So it's not expensive, but it will give you full EDR. So at least having that running on all machines, try and putting it into Sentinel. It's not crazy expensive for 20 machines. We've got a client who did it, Tom, and it was cost neutral. So, yeah, that's good. And the final, I promise, the final, will there be a Cy Spirit / Cy Whiskey offshoot in 2025, maybe as a session after Cy Beers? No.
I know you asked that question and I didn't put him up to it, I promise.
We are not going to make Gincident response.
Don't worry, your branding.
It's bad enough that we did three beers a couple of weeks ago that we've got to try out. So we'll have to watch out for Triscale, Cy Beer, and then we've got to come up with the new name. So, guys, it's been fantastic for Hackmas. Always love sitting talking with you guys. There was another 30 questions from our team internally and from a few other locations. Maybe we need to do a part two. But
yeah, let's do it.
For now, in the meantime, cheers.
Cheers.
Cheers. Cheers.